just fine through the bumps of time in your prime. Didn't you? People called, say beware, dawn. You're bound to fold. You thought they were all just kidding you.
All right, folks, we're back. Second hour of the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. If you got a question, comment, just want to rant or rave, doesn't make any difference, call in, talk to me. By the way, I forgot first hour, and I wanted to do this. I want to give a shout-out to Eric Jones. I think he did a good job. I was on my way from Texas back to Round Rock. I actually called into the show Thursday night. Right, driving down the road trying to loosen my load at 85 miles an hour through Texas. I love doing that, especially in my car. I have a Hyundai Sonata, and it just cruises like the wind, folks. But anyway, he had brought up about all of these companies and all of these banks and all of these teachers' retirement funds that are invested in the private prisons, and it made me sick. And I mentioned to him the other night when I called in, I'd like to get a list of those companies. I want to know who it is that's investing in the torture of these poor guys that are in these private prisons that are being treated terribly, who are being guarded by people who aren't even badged that take an oath, okay? They're just guys they pick up off the street and put a uniform on them. It's sickening. Anyway, getting back to all this. So, all of which is to say, nobody can predict the future course of cryptocurrencies, other than to say that speculative booms eventually end and technologies mature into forms that solve real business problems in uniquely cheap and robust ways no other technology can match. So while we can't predict the future forms of cryptocurrencies that will dominate the mature marketplace, we can predict that markets will sort of wheat from the chaff, if you will, by winnowing the entries down to those that solve real business problems, i.e. addressing scarcities in ways that are cheap and robust and that cannot be solved by other technologies. So do you see why I kind of compare this with the dot-com boom? And I'm not saying it's not good or bad, and for the listener out there, and they know who I'm talking about, this person knows who I'm talking about, is that I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying I'm skeptical of it. And it's hard to really dig down into this without simply just taking a chance. Whereas, I'm a guy that likes to hold stuff in my hand and feel it and look at it and so forth, you know. And gold or silver is one of those, or two of those things. Or food, or bullets, or whatever, you know, are one of those things. So I'm not saying I'm not going to do it. I'm saying I just need more information about it and what the pitfalls would be. And I'd love your input here, folks. If any of you are in this, or have you looked at it, or you know, you've had experience with Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of these cryptocurrencies, please let me know. Call in 800-313-9443. Now, the anything goes speculative boom, the technologies with potentially mass applications, well, they often spark speculative booms. And the advent of radio generated a speculative boom just as heady as any recent tech frenzy. Many people decry the current speculative frenzy in cryptocurrencies, and others warn the whole thing is a Ponzi scheme. It's a fad. It's a bubble in which the gullible sheep are being led to slaughter. I don't know. I need some input from people out there that are more intelligent than me, because I haven't really taken the opportunity to dig in it too deeply. And by the way, you know, like a lot of you out there, my funds are limited. You know, I can't, years ago, back in my former day, I could take chances and it wouldn't really matter. Well, now I'm old, you know, and you hold on to your dollars tighter. But, you know, tribalism is running hot in the cryptocurrency space, with these promoters and detractors of the various cryptocurrencies doing battle in online forums. Bitcoin is doomed by FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt about its warring camps, or it's the gold standard. Ethereum is either fundamentally flawed or the platform destined to dominate, and so on. You know, you get conflicting stories about this just depending on the perspective of who you're talking to. And the technological issues are thorny and obtuse to non-programmers, and the eventual utility of the many cryptocurrencies is still an open question, and it's in development. So I hope you understand, you know, that I'm kind of leery, I'm on the fence, I don't really know, and even if I did know, I'm not going to put a lot of money into it. But it's very difficult for non-experts like me to sort out all these claims. What's steak and what's sizzle? You know, we can't be sure a new entrant is actually a blockchain, or if its promoters are using blockchain and are selling buzzwords. Give me your input on this, folks. I mean, if anybody, if you have any experience with it, I'd love to hear about it. 800-313-9443. Even more confusing are the debates over the decentralization. And one of the key advances of the Bitcoin blockchain technology is its decentralized mode of operation. The blockchain is distributed on servers all over the planet. And those paying for the electricity to run those servers are paid for this service with Bitcoin that is mined by the process of maintaining the blockchain. There's no central committee organizing this process. So it's, again, it's not tangible. Critics have noted that the mining of Bitcoin is now dominated by large companies in China who act as an informal kind of a central committee, and that they can block any changes to these protocols governing the blockchain. But then others claim that competing cryptocurrencies such as Ethereum are centrally managed, despite the defenders' claims to the contrary. Who do you believe? And meanwhile, fortunes are being made as speculators jump from one cryptocurrency to the next, as ICOs, the initial coin offerings, proliferate. Since the new coins must typically be purchased with existing cryptocurrencies, this demand has been one driver of soaring prices for Ethereum. And as if all this wasn't confusing enough, the many differences between the various cryptocurrencies are difficult to understand as well as to assess. And while Bitcoin was designed to be a currency and nothing but a currency, other cryptocurrencies such as Ethereum are not just currencies, they are platforms for other uses of blockchain technologies. For example, the much touted smart contracts. This potential for applications beyond currencies is the reason why the big corporations have formed the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. And despite the impressive credentials of the alliance, real-world applications that are available to ordinary consumers and small enterprises using these blockchain technologies, they're still in development. There's lots of sizzle, but no steak yet. So the question is, you know, who will the winners be? Am I the only one here, folks? Have you got experience with this? Do you know anything about it? I mean, has anybody made any money with this? How can non-experts like me sort out what sizzle will fizzle and what sizzle will become dominant? The short answer is we can't. And an experienced programmer who has actually worked on the Bitcoin blockchain, the Ethereum and Dash, to name three leading cryptocurrencies, they would be well-placed to explain the trade-offs in each. And yes, there are always trade-offs. But precious few such qualified folks are available for unbiased commentary, as tribalism has snared many developers into biases that are not always advertised up front. So what's a non-expert to make of this swirl of speculation, the skepticism, the tribalism, the confusing technological claims and the counterclaims and the unavoidable uncertainties of the exhilarating but dangerously speculative boom phase? There is no way to predict the course of specific cryptocurrencies or the potential emergence of a new cryptocurrency that leaves all the existing versions in the dust, or governments' future actions to endorse or even criminalize cryptocurrencies. But what we can do now in the present is to analyze present-day cryptocurrencies through the filters of scarcity and utility. Now, the most profitable catalyst for this, I'm certain, will be the collapse of the global fiat currency regime, something that increasingly looks more and more inevitable. And as we look back at what John reported today and what I touched on tonight regarding the crisis that's happening in New Jersey, in Illinois, Kentucky, soon to be California, and many other states that aren't even reporting, like this state of Arizona. You know, the trend is looking like it's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot darker before it gets light. So this collapse will destroy a staggering amount of the paper wealth currently held in today's household, which makes developing a fully informed understanding of the cryptocurrency landscape now, today, an extremely important requirement for any prudent investor. So again, I want to reiterate, it's not something that I'm saying I'll do or I won't do. I don't have enough information on, and it's a kind of a, it's especially, you know, in my experience with the dot-com phase back then, it's a scary place to be, especially if you have limited funds. Now, when I have time, and right now this isn't the front thing on my plate, because there's a lot of things John mentioned on his show today, folks. There's things I'm doing behind the scenes. I haven't shared all of it with you, but I'm making some arrangements here. I'm getting rid of some stuff. I'm lightening the load, if you will, and we've got some plans in the mix. And in the not too distant future, I might add, these are things that are not like 6 months down the road. We're talking about only a few weeks away. So, you know, and I won't be on the air Thursday night. Eric will be doing my show. Now, I'll be doing my show Friday night, plus all week next week. But a week from Thursday, I'm going to be flying to Indiana. And there's a contractual issue I have back there, but also I'm sitting down meeting with my IT guy, who a lot of you know is my son, internet guru. He's built a pretty, you know, lucrative internet business. And I'm going to be sitting down with him regarding the RBN store and putting that back up to speed. John and I will be looking at different things in there, but this is all regarding bringing RBN's website up to speed and being able to provide, you know, quality products that bring value to everybody's table. So, you know, I ask you to bear with me here through this, because there's a lot of things that I need to do. John and I have talked about this. And one of them is that I am exiting this mobile home in the not too distant future. So I've got a lot of stuff on my plate, a lot of things I need to get done, and just bear with me, and we'll all work our way through this. You know, and so off topic, okay, enough about the cryptocurrencies and enough about the budgets and so forth. And maybe I'm old school, but, you know, way back when I first became a listener to RBN back in 2000, I think it was 2006, late 2006, is that the gold and silver thing always made a lot of sense to me, and I have been an investor in that. And it's had its ups and downs. You know, I've seen gold at the time I started investing in that back in late 2005, I believe. It was $575 an ounce, something like that. And it's now, what, $1,200 an ounce. So that was in 2005, so 12 years, it's doubled. All right. Well, you can only say it's doubled, though, in relationship to fiat currency, which is how you measure it. But as we know, they all manipulate the market. They all manipulate the sale of gold and silver, and they do that by selling paper on non-existent gold and silver, which hasn't even been mined yet, okay, which is another scheme that they have going on. And when that all crashes down, we won't even be able to monitor the value of gold and silver, with the exception of what it's worth in the marketplace, because at some point in time, the dollar's not even going to exist. So that said, let's shift gears here. Again, phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. If you have a question, comment, you want to just jump in and chat for a while. I ran across an article on RBN, which kind of made me think about these lawyers that are, you know, washing up dead on the shore in Florida in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's district. But isn't it funny how people that seem to be onto something or have had involvement in something that is dicey or suspicious, they seem to wind up dead. A lot of that happening these days, more than I've ever seen before. Let's see. Let's go to, is it BC in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay. Yeah, my question is simply,
Hold on. Mike, turn your volume down. You've got, there's something bleeding through here. All right, BC, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, I just got a question. What happens to Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies if there's an EMP, whether it's from the sun or man-made? Do they all disappear rather than gold and silver, which is in your hand?
You've got some noise going on. Have you got your radio turned up, BC?
Oh, I still have it turned on.
Yeah, you need to turn it down. Okay. Okay, that was me. Are you back? Okay, so in answer to your question, if there's an EMP or a sun, a sun flare or whatever, that's a good question. No, that's a good question. And yes, what happens if the grid goes down? What happens if the internet goes down? What happens to all of our digital-based, cyber currency? Where does it go? Is it gone for good? You know, that's a great question, BC, because that's another thing that would inculcate fear into somebody that is thinking about getting into this. Because, yes, you brought up a good point. The gold and silver is tangible. You can touch it, feel it. You can't drive it down the road, but you can look at it. You know, you can say, look at this. You know, somebody will say, I want to buy one of those. You know, but the cryptocurrencies, it's all in cyberspace. It's not real. It's not tangible. It's all just digital. You know, it's like in the bank. Okay, now we have these Federal Reserve notes, BC, that we carry around in our wallets. You know, but they also have in digital form, accounts and so forth. What happened on 9/11 when the buildings collapsed? Look at the chaos in the financial world when the buildings collapsed, and how long was it in chaos? Because certain accounts disappeared, certain monies disappeared. And I'm not going to say it wasn't by design, but the fact of the matter was it disappeared. So that's a great point. Anything else you want to add?
That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, BC. Something else to ponder, folks, is, if it is indeed all digital, it's cyberspace, and that grid goes down, what happens to whatever we have or we thought we had that was in there? Good food for thought. Anyway, all right, phone lines are still open, 800-313-9443. But again, as I said, I ran across an article here, and I find it interesting that these people, these attorneys that are investigating, immigration, or they're investigating visa fraud, or, they're getting close to the upper echelons of our, deep state or our establishment or whatever, they wind up dead. This one, Sandy Hook collateral damage. Lawyer found dead in an overturned car with a bullet in his head, and it was declared a suicide? Really? Oh, by the way, this was written by my buddy, Jim Fetzer. A lawyer named Gugza Abraham, or Abe, DeBella, was found in his overturned car on a lonely road close to his home in small upscale Redding, Connecticut. And the local police, including Chief Douglas Fuchs, determined right away that the car had crashed and overturned because Mr. DeBella had been drinking. DeBella was so embarrassed, get this, that he shot himself in the back of the head inside the car, they said. A shoe print was found on his back. Well, perhaps he trampled on himself as well. Attorney DeBella, a bachelor, used to frequent a couple of local establishments where also Reading police and firemen could be found on a regular basis. Were tongues being let loose there? Did Mr. DeBella hear something that he found troubling? We'll continue with this when we get back. Stick around. See you on the other side.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. I'm going through this. Yeah, DiBella, he was a bachelor, and he used to frequent a couple of local establishments where the Reading police and firemen could be found on a regular basis. And so it poses the question, if somebody overheard something there, or did DiBella hear something that he found troubling? Now, the reason that that question is asked is because Reading Police Chief Douglas Fuchs bragged during the Sandy Hook event that he was on speed dial with then Newtown Police Chief Michael Kehoe. He also bragged about he and his men were the first on the Sandy Hook scene, even before the Newtown police showed up and he had to take command of the situation. Okay. Now, another actor covering up Mr. DiBella's death is Danbury State Attorney Stephen J. Sadinsky, who had the star billing in the Sandy Hook saga. He became a master in cover-ups. Sadinsky acknowledged in his official report on Sandy Hook that they had been unable to connect the AR-15 that was alleged to have been used with any of the other slugs recovered, and that the rifle he was supposed to have used to shoot his mother did not have his fingerprints, which means that this investigation, or his investigation, was unable to connect the weapons to the victims or the purported shooter,
as a complete forensic failure. Now, a third person, a sort of decent guy who was tangled up in the Sandy Hook web, is now retired Connecticut State Police Commissioner Reuben F. Bradford. Is that the guy that said that anybody that posts anything about this would be singled out and prosecuted if they didn't believe the official story? I'm not sure. But anyway, Reuben Bradford, the attorney to Bella, wrote to Bradford for help when the Reading police chief Fuchs sat on a gun permission DiBella had submitted. Bradford intervened on DiBella's behalf, and that must have ticked off the heroic police chief. Newtown is surrounded by small, affluent towns with their own police and fire departments. Perhaps Mr. DiBella did run his car off that lonely road. Perhaps he did shoot himself in the back of the head and trampled himself on his own back. It's as likely a story as the Sandy Hook saga with some of the same actors involved. DiBella's family lives in Maryland, and I'm not sure how familiar they are with the Sandy Hook saga. They probably have no way of connecting the dots here. It may be nothing, but then again, there is never smoke without fire. When first coming across the DiBella story, I wrote about it, and this is Jim Fetzer talking. I wrote about it on the now defunct Memory Hole blog. James Tracy devoted much time and space to Sandy Hook on this blog. And as a result, he lost his job, and the blog was taken down. Thanks to Leonid Posner, who must be an agent of the three-letter agency since he never shows his face, just his nefarious actions. Huh. So the death of Guxa DiBella would not be the first associated with Sandy Hook. Tony Mead, who has done exceptional work on the charade, has noted a growing list of, well, disappearing witnesses related to the case, which was published by James Tracy on his Memory Hole blog back on July 10th, 2014. Goes on to say, does anyone seriously believe that an attorney with a background in neurobiology and physiology from the University of Maryland College Park, a master's in public health, and a law degree from Cardozo School of Law would contemplate suicide because he had had an accident? That he was drunk enough to have an accident and then formed the intention to take his own life in despair and stomped on his own back? Just how dumb are we supposed to be? Let me click on this here. I want to see if the, well, yeah, which gets into the disappearing witnesses in Sandy Hook. And I normally don't spend a lot of time on this stuff, but, and there's a kind of a, am I still here? Okay. All right, we'll go to break. We'll be right back, folks. Because I'm mad as hell, can't bring myself to do what it is you think I
should. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Nutramedicals Calm Mind supports a relaxed mood and helps to support your brain neurotransmitter, helps lower blood pressure, helps to make you feel calm all day long, and helps to make it easier to go to sleep. Calmline contains GABA. It also contains xanthine and L-theanine, an amino acid from green tea. And it contains myo-inositol, a special B vitamin. Because it's such high quality, it works amazingly for anxiety, panic attack, and for depression. Get Calmline at NutriMedical.com, NutriMedical.com, or 888-212-8871. The special studies that have been done on Calmline show that it helps to stabilize the neurons in the brain, lower the autonomic nervous system that raises blood pressure, and it helps to support normal calming activity throughout the body. That means you're going to have much higher energy level, much more stable mood, be able to tolerate stress better, and it helps to stabilize blood sugar as well. So order Calmline at NutriMedical.com.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER, stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. And Angioprim is the result, a safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. 4th of July weekend. I'm sure that a lot of people are out doing this and doing that and, well, I don't know, getting ready for some kind of fireworks display, celebration, something like that. I don't know. All right, but I couldn't resist, folks. I had to go here. Sandy Hook's Disappearing Witnesses. I have to share it with you. It's by Tony Mead, and it was written July 10th, 2014, which is 3 years ago. But according to Tony, close to 19 months have passed since the event known as Sandy Hook massacre transpired, and amazingly, there has still been no conclusive evidence put forth by any of the families affected or the investigators involved to dispel the many conspiracy theories that have evolved from the event. In fact, new mysteries seem to expose themselves even more as time passes by. From Douglas Cottle, who died September 29, 2012, at age 62, to Michael Belmore, who died May 3, 2014, at age 27. More questions than answers seem to arise. The Connecticut State Police Commander, the Connecticut State Police Commissioner, the Western Connecticut State Police Commander, as well as the Connecticut State Medical Examiner, have all been eliminated from the story, either by retiring or death. What better way to cover up any possibility of ever disclosing the truth? What better way to perpetuate conspiracy theories? Perhaps the death of Douglas Cottle was an unfortunate incident, compounding the grief of Alyssa Parker when she lost her daughter Emily in the Sandy Hook tragedy. He was her father and the grandfather of Emily. He was a 62-year-old dentist from Ogden, Utah, who sustained serious injury while participating in his ninth Latoja 2006-mile bicycle race on September 9, 2012. According to his daughter, she thinks another racer may have clipped his tire, throwing him off the bike, where he crash-landed on his face. His face suffered only over 30 fractures. Now, perhaps if repeatedly beaten with a tire iron, one could sustain 30 fractures. I find it highly improbable that a fall from a bicycle could inflict such injuries. Nevertheless, Mr. Cottle was sent to an elderly care facility after being released from the hospital, apparently because the VA hospital was full. Mr. Cottle was reportedly combative at times at the center as he repeatedly tried to rip out his feeding tube, despite their attempts to restrain him. He was uncooperative and reportedly tried to stand on his own against the evidence or advice of his physician, which led to his falling down and sustaining yet another head injury. This time, the injury proved fatal, and he died on September 29th. Was this a case of a terrible accident? There hadn't been a fatal accident in Latoja's 30-year history of racing. Compounded by a lack of critical care rendered to an apparently healthy individual prior to the race? Or was it the apparent removal of a person who may have had foreknowledge and was unwilling to participate in such an endeavor as the Sandy Hook hoax? From all of the nice things said about him in his obituaries, I truly believe this was a good man. He may have been the first of the many memorial funds yet to come to the participants of Ogden, Utah. You can still donate, blah, blah, blah. At least in the case of Mr. Cottle, there is somewhat of an explanation as to the events and injuries that led to his demise. And more recently, the death of William Podgorski, the Connecticut State Police Western District Commander. Oh, wait a minute. That's the guy. Isn't it William Podgorski? Isn't that the guy that came on and did a press conference that anybody talks about this and has suspicions or anything, well, you know, we're going to be investigated or arrested? I think that was him. William Podgorski, the Connecticut State Police Western District Commander, who was also a lead investigator in the Sandy Hook incident, remains unexplained. He died after a brief undisclosed illness, followed by surgery on Monday, June 16th at Yale New Haven Hospital at the age of, guess what, 49. According to a friend of mine who had seen Bill Podgorski just a short time before his death, he appeared in perfect health. No further information has been released regarding his sudden death. This Yale New Haven Hospital was also the place where reporter Michael Belmore breathed his last breath on May 3, 2014, after being relieved of his duties as a New Haven registered journalist and reduced to a consultant to the town of New Hamden. Judging from the credits on his obituary, this kid was a talented, aspiring journalist who would never leave such an admirable job at the Register to become a consultant. Almost reminds you of a Seth Rich situation, doesn't it? Breathed his last breath at the new, after being relieved of his duties and reduced to a consultant. Well, perhaps he was asked to leave. He was involved in the earliest reporting on the Sandy Hook shooting and was there on December 14th, according to his Twitter feed. He was also present when both Governor Malloy and President Obama addressed the city of Newtown in the aftermath. Now, how does a 27-year-old, same as Seth Rich, he was 27, how does he die so suddenly and inexplicably? And again, in the care of the Yale New Haven Hospital. Did he stumble into something he shouldn't have? Some of the mysterious deaths occurring in the past 18 months, which now are like 5 years ago, are not as obviously connected to the Sandy Hook incident. Take, for example, Joanne June Eglitis, the secretary of Irving Pinsky, who was the attorney who initiated a lawsuit against the state of Connecticut for $100 million on behalf of a six-year-old child that was traumatized by the incident. Despite his acting on behalf of the affected child, he was immediately vilified, chastised and threatened. He even had gunshots fired through his office. He withdrew the lawsuit, citing the need for further investigation. Now, I wonder who would have had the motive and the means, or the guns, to enact such an act of terror on his office. His secretary, Joanne June Aglietis, died September 21st, 2013, at guess where? Yale New Haven Hospital. Again, I have yet to find an explanation as to the death of this 53-year-old woman, and it would sure be an effective way to intimidate Mr. Pinsky from reconsidering his lawsuit. It sure seems odd that the deaths of Aglietis, Podgorski, and Belmore all occurred at Yale New Haven Hospital as well. These deaths supplement the other few mysteries surrounding Sandy Hook, such as the death of Scott Getzinger, who was the props manager for the Batman Dark Knight Rises movie, in which the map showed Sandy Hook was shown. Remember that? He died after sustaining non-life-threatening injuries in his car crash on April 7th of 2012. Investigation of his death still has not been completed. Now, there is also the case of Robert Hoagland, who went missing July 28, 2013, and has not been seen since. He was missing when his wife was in Turkey for a 17-day excursion. And with all of the mysterious zero real estate transactions that have occurred, you knew about those folks, right? All of these zero real estate transactions occurred in Sandy Hook on Christmas Day. I got that from Sophie Smallstorm. Yes, with all of those mysterious zero real estate transactions that have occurred, and the odd number of homes owned by individual families and corporation, it is certainly relevant that Robert Hoagland was a real estate agent in Newtown. And despite various criticism levied against Vision Government Solutions and their explanation that the $0 amounts assigned to various transactions was some sort of a glitch, they have since revitalized all of their data, and yet the $0 amounts remain. Now, I'm not sure why Robert Hoagland's wife was in Turkey when he disappeared, but it is quite curious when you compare the fact to the case of Philip Marshall, the 9/11 truther, who mysteriously killed his two children before killing himself while his wife was reportedly traveling abroad, and yes, you guessed it, Turkey. The untimely deaths of some of these involved parties is accented by the removal of other key players who have removed themselves by retiring from their positions, making them, well, unavailable to be held accountable for the roles that they played. Wayne Carver, remember that guy, the clown, the medical examiner? Wayne Carver is perhaps the most notorious of these participants. After threatening in 2011 to resign from his position, he abruptly changed his mind and agreed to stay on. And after lobbying against the passage of Bill 1054, the bill to prevent the release of the pediatric autopsies, well, he suddenly had a change of heart there as well and supported its passage. As the awkward and sometimes imbecilic spokesperson to the press, he was always to be remembered for that famous quote, "I just hope the people of Newtown don't have it come crashing down on their heads later." What did he mean by that? You remember that statement, folks, in that press conference? Boy, he was a goofy. He didn't even make sense half the time. Wayne Carver retired May 1st, 2014, but has stayed on to help his successor and to complete his cases. He claims he also wants to stay on in a part-time capacity. Seems like he's retiring without retiring completely. Next, we have the state police commissioner, Reuben F. Bradford, who shocked everyone by announcing his retirement prior to the release of the Connecticut State Police report on the Sandy Hook school shooting. Now, he was not very popular amongst the Connecticut State Police, as he and Danny Stebbins, the CSP commander, were the first to receive a note or a vote of no confidence from the other state troopers for the first time in its 109-year existence in June of 2012. Commissioner Bradford also headed up the state's emergency services and was quoted as saying, and I quote, "The horror and unspeakable sadness of that day and the lives that were lost will never be forgotten," unquote, in a letter that accompanied the release of the long-awaited official police report. Now, Danny Stebbins, who was vilified for releasing information about the Sandy Hook incident at a conference in New Orleans that was apparently meant to be kept confidential, also announced his retirement. He will be gone at the end of June 2014. and Governor Daniel P. Malloy credited outgoing State Police Colonel Danny Stebbins with guiding the agency through the unimaginable and difficult period following the Sandy Hook shooting. Both Stebbins and Bradford were appointees of Governor Malloy and were directly responsible for signing off on the release of critical evidence and information in the Sandy Hook shooting. Now that they are gone, we will still be held accountable. And if it is shown that some of this information, wait a minute, let me read that again. Now that they are gone, will they still be held accountable if it is shown that some of this information was incorrect? And of course, we can't forget Lieutenant George Cinco, who was working a side job directing traffic at a construction site on December 14th and failed to report to Sandy Hook School until 2 hours after he was informed of the shooting. He retired at age 49. Wow, that's awful early. He must have really had some investment, probably in private prisons, huh, folks? He was reprimanded by Police Chief Michael Kehoe for his delayed response in 2012, but not severely enough, according to his peers. When he was placed on administrative leave after the accident in April, he decided not to return to the Newtown Police Force. Kehoe stated that he was not surprised by Cinco's decision. Another one bites the dust. Well, David Fine, the state's top prosecutor and presidential appointee, also saw the aftermath of Sandy Hook as the perfect time to move on. Fine was involved with Eric Holder and Governor Malloy in implementing Project Longevity. Now, that was a program designed to combat gun violence. What a coincidence. He was also heavily involved in the investigation and pursued anyone who stood to capitalize on the deaths of those children, well, except, of course, the parents. Fine stepped up to the plate when a woman posing as the aunt of Noah Posner was arrested for trying to solicit funds in his memory. This arrest should serve as a warning to anyone who attempts to profit from this tragedy by contriving fraudulent schemes that exploit the victims, their families, and individuals who sincerely want to help, said U.S. Attorney David Fine. Despite denying any wrongdoing and saying she was set up, Noelle Alba was sentenced to 8 months in prison and 2 years probation. She had only collected $240 and reportedly returned the money. U.S. Attorney Jonathan Francis argued for prison time, saying Alba's actions had caused emotional harm to the community and created a chilling effect on charitable giving. It's a callous, calculating attempt to profit off the murder of children, he said. I guess the millions of dollars donated to the United Way and the Sandy Hook Promise are viewed in a different light. Well, obviously, David Fine was serious. So, as key role players in the Sandy Hook school shooting continue to disappear, we are left to wonder exactly who, if anyone, will be left to answer questions that remain unaddressed. Stephen Sadinsky, the lead investigator, and J. Paul Vance, the Connecticut state spokesman, are two of the few that remain as a number of involved parties continuing to dwindle. If there is an attempt to conceal information from the public, one of the most effective ways to accomplish that would be to remove the involved parties that have access to key information. Those that refuse to cooperate by retiring or resigning may be coerced or silenced in different ways. Here I have been able to cite only a few of the parties whose stories have made it into the newspapers and local media. Who knows what other stories remain undisclosed to the public? Another effective method of concealing evidence is to discourage anyone from asking questions in the first place. Remember that J. Paul Vance? That's the guy, folks. The CT state police spokesman said early on that anyone sharing misinformation on social media would be prosecuted. What better way to control a situation than to make it illegal to disseminate information unless it comes from an official source? This despite the fact that all of the early information from mainstream media came from unnamed or anonymous sources. As time has passed, we have seen examples of the persecution of, if not the prosecution of, people that do question the official story. One of the most intriguing cases is that of YouTube videographer Scott Walker, a.k.a. Jonathan Rich. Jonathan was arrested in May of 2013 for allegedly making threatening phone calls to the coroner's office as well as to certain families affected by the Sandy Hook tragedy. It seems to me that Jonathan has some pretty legitimate questions that should have been asked by any responsible journalist in regards to the coroner's role in the passing of Bill 1054, which made it possible for the state to deny access to pediatric autopsy reports and is probably the most compelling evidence of pre-planning involved with the Sandy Hook's hoax. Dr. Carver has never answered any questions regarding this, primarily because Jonathan was the only person with enough courage to ask him. Isn't that just wonderful? Carver refused to even get on the phone with him, although he was obviously in the room with his assistant when the call was received. John also had contacted the Allison Wyatt Memorial Fund to ask them why they had mistakenly used the picture of Lily Galbert to promote their fundraising efforts. Didn't anyone realize that they were using the wrong child's photo for nearly 2 weeks? Surely the parents had some involvement with their own child's memorial fund, didn't they? Jonathan was then harassed. Oh, got a break coming up. Final segment coming up, folks. Be back on the other side.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux is really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder, and their lower legs were hurting at a red color, but thankfully, there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Back, final segment of the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host. I want to give a shout out to the listeners who both emailed me and also called into the network and reminded me it was Walter Burian that compiled the talked about the confidential annual financial reports. Thank you, guys. Let me continue with this and close it out. Yes, Dr. Carver refused to talk to Jonathan, and Jonathan was then harassed by a local New York police where he lives and told that he would be arrested and held on a $250,000 bond unless he drove himself to Connecticut and turned himself in to be held on a lesser $50,000 bond. Because he was so afraid and didn't want to jeopardize his family, he complied. He has since spent nearly $50,000 on attorney's fees due to the fact that his hearing has been scheduled and then postponed at the last minute a total of 9 times so far. This sure seems a bit extreme for what is considered as a Class C misdemeanor, the lowest of crimes in Connecticut. And more recently has been revealed that a person could face detainment and even further punishment just for simply speaking about the possibility that all is not as it seems regarding the Sandy Hook story. A school teacher from Poundbridge, New York, was recently accosted by police, taken to the hospital, and involuntarily detained for over a week for psychological evaluations. Does that sound familiar? Where it was then determined that he somehow presented a risk to the community. These allegations all came about as a result of his alleged online communications with an acquaintance on a Words with Friends app. Whether or not this acquaintance reported directly to the FBI or whether his communication was somehow monitored remains to be revealed. Despite the subsequent findings that he is mentally competent, the Bedford Schools District terminated his employment on May 22, 2014. He has since initiated a lawsuit to get his job back. Hopefully, his lawsuit will lead to some legal discussion and a better understanding of the events surrounding Sandy Hook and the lack of disclosure. History is being created, folks, before our eyes. I encourage you to take the time to read the Wikipedia account of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. There, you will find a collection of nonsensical information that is presented as fact. When we realize that laws are being written and society is being manipulated as a result of what happened on that fateful day, it becomes obvious that we have a responsibility to become informed of what actually transpired at Sandy Hook. After 18 months of research, the only thing that I am convinced of is that I do not know the truth. Well, on which side do you lean, folks? You know, there are people on this network that say Sandy Hook happened. There are people on this network that say Sandy Hook didn't happen. It was a false flag and it was a hoax, primarily to force the gun control legislation and also psychological evaluations, which they're doing a real good job of in the case of this guy, in the case of Chris, which Eric Jones reported on last week. And I would like to hear that story. I think he's hopefully going to get Chris up Thursday night. And if he is, I'm going to be listening, because anytime stuff like that is involved, you know, I want to hear what's going on. And back to what I had reported early in the show, guys in the industry of mobile homes that are stealing these properties from people or finding excuses to get rid of them and turn around and resell their property, like Sun Valley Fiduciary Group, which I was the catalyst that caused them to ultimately file bankruptcy and get out of town, okay, that's what needs to happen to these park owners. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow night, same time, same station. Michael Herzog signing off. Bye for now.
I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying.
The new word on the street is bloated. Yeah, you eat this food, GMO, herbicide, pesticide, foods aren't safe anymore. And then we eat them and we're bloated. Our stomach says, no, no, no more, Seymour. So what we have to do is drink the tea. Are you on the tea? GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Super strength tea. It will help you with the new word, bloated. You can get it today. Log on to GetTheTea.com.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.